Welcome to Computer Science E1 review session for exam one. My name is Alex, and I will be holding the review session today just to go over what you guys have learned and maybe some questions so you guys can be familiar and be prepared for the test. Okay, so I will try to write things on the board since the screen is not working yet. So first thing I want to start with is the units or the binary stuff that are related to hardware. First of all, do you guys remember what a bit is? A bit, B-I-T.
One or zero.
Yeah, it's one or zero. So one bit, you can just think of it as zeros and ones. What about one byte? 8 bits. Okay, and then now here comes the units. Do you guys remember, say, KB with a small b? That's kilobit. How many bits are there in 1 kilobit? Yes. It's 10 to the 24, or sorry, 10 24, or 2 to the 10th. What about 1 kilobyte? How many bytes are there? Yeah, exactly. It's going to be the same thing, 2 to the 10. What about, let's go with bytes for now on. 1 megabyte, how many bytes are there?
That
would be a million. Uh-huh. So it'll be roughly 1 million. What's the next thing? Gigabyte? Do you guys remember?
Billion.
Mm-hmm. That's roughly 1 billion. And the last thing is terabyte. Exactly. It's roughly 1 trillion. And these are in bytes. Okay. That should be fine so far. Okay, the next thing I want to go over is quickly, I went over this last time about conversion between binary and decimal. Let's see, so the easier one is to convert binary to decimal, so I'll do that first. So let's say we have a 8-bit number. Okay, so this is an 8-bit number because there are 8 of these zeros and ones. The question is, how would you convert this binary number into a decimal? The way you would do is, this number is always 1, and then the next, or it's 1, or you can think of it as 2 to the 0th power. The next number is 2, or 2 to the 1st power, and then 2 to the 2nd power, 2 to the 3rd, 2 to the 4th, 2 to the 5th, 2 to the 6th, and 2 to the 7th. And all you have to do for the conversion is just to figure out the numbers where it says 1. So in this case, the 1's digit is 1, the 2's digit is 1, the 4th digit is 1, and the 2 to the 5th power, which is 32, is also 1. And all you have to do is add these numbers together. So that way you'll get 32 plus 4 plus 2 plus 1, and that gets you 39. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Second part is decimal to binary. I believe there are two ways to do it. There's one way that I did last time. And there is one way that I believe they went over in class, so I'll go over two ways, and you guys can pick whichever way you feel it's easier. Let's say I have a number 50, 55. You want to change that to a binary number. So one way is you can list from, so you know these numbers are 2 to the 0th power, 2 to the 1st power, 2 to the 2nd power, or you can just write them as 1, 2, 4, and 8. I can write them out, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, and you just always multiply by 2 and write the numbers down until you reach a point where the number is bigger than the number that you want. At that point, you will take, since 64 is too big to go into 55, you'll take 32. So 55 minus 32, that gets you 23. And since you use subtracted 32, there's a 1 here. And then the next thing, 16 goes into 23. So you can do, this is a very bad math notation, but 23 minus 16 equals 7. So there's 1 16. 8 doesn't go into 7, so that's a 0. 4 goes into 7, so 7 minus 4 equals 3. There's 1 4. And 2 goes into 3, so 3 minus 2 equals 1. There's a 2. And there's a 1 left, so there's a 1. And this will be your, this will be 55 in binary. Another way to do it is, you can, before I go into the other way, does this way make sense so far?
Yeah.
Okay. The other way to do it is sort of, you can imagine doing things backwards. So you write 55, and then you always divide this number by 2. In this case, 55 divided by 2 is 27, and you get a remainder of 1. You repeat that process again. 27 divided by 2 equals 13, with the remainder 1. 13 divided by 2 is 6, with a remainder 1. 6 divided by 2 equals 3, with a remainder 0. 3 divided by 2 equals 1, with a remainder 1. And that's it. 1 doesn't go into 2 anymore. And once you have this, you go backwards from the bottom to the top, and then you'll write these numbers in this order. So in this case, you'll write 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1, 1, which is the same as this number. Okay, so there are these two ways to do it. If the question comes up on the test, you can feel free to choose whichever one. Yes. Yes.
So then if it has to be a byte, would you just add 2 zeros to the front of it?
Exactly. So this right now is a 6-bit number. If the question says convert 55 from decimal to a 8-bit number, you would write this, and then since you need to make it an 8-bit number, you would just add zeros at the end to make it as like placeholders. Any questions? No? Okay. I guess you guys can go online. Oh, okay. I'll quickly show an image. Give it a little time. Okay. Have you guys seen this in class? Okay, and just as a review, what's funny about this comic? What is the first?
It was
Yeah, exactly. And why does all these zeros and ones mean you nerd? Uh-huh. Right, exactly. The keyword is ASCII. So these numbers, they are 8 bits. So let's see. So the first word is 01011001. Next word is, or the next letter actually, is 01001111. The next one is 01010101. I won't do the last four just to save time. But for the test, you might have to convert these numbers into ASCII values. If you do, you'll probably be given an ASCII table that looks pretty much like this. And the whole point of this ASCII table is you would first have to convert these binary numbers into decimal numbers with the process that we've done before. So this, for example, as an example, the first number would be 1, 2, 4, 8, 16 will be 64 plus 16 plus 8 plus 1. That gets you, is it 89? Yes, it's 89. So you would change this number into decimal, which if you do the calculation, you'll get 89. And with this number 89, you look up on the ASCII table. And here you will see that the number 89 corresponds with the letter Y. And you would do the same process for the other 6 numbers. And in the end, you would get the words "you nerd."
Now, would you know if we have access to the ASCII table during the test? Or is that something that we're just going to have to remember, like 65 is A and 97 is lowercase a?
You can probably figure it out by just knowing what the capital A is and then the lowercase a is, and then just figure out what the other alphabets are. But I don't believe it's going to be that intense. So maybe the extent of it would just be able to convert, say, the question will be this, given you this, you have to change that to a letter from an ASCII table, and then you have to change this number to a decimal number, and then with the ASCII table provided by David and Dan, you would look up what this number corresponds to on the ASCII table. Okay? All right. That's it for this for now. Okay, so while I am erasing the board, I have a question about 32 versus 64-bit computers. So if you guys remember, what does a 64-bit computer do differently than a 32-bit computer?
Faster, has better graphics?
It's faster, yeah. And also it can compute bigger numbers because there are more memory to do it. So 64-bit computers can compute faster and do bigger calculations with bigger numbers. I think that's pretty much all you need to know. Okay, hardwares. So on assignment 2, there was a list of a lot of terms. But I'm pretty sure you don't have to know all of them. But there are certain words, certain vocabulary words that you should know. So for example, let's say, so this is part 2. I'll just list a couple words here. Motherboard. CPU, HDD, RAM, maybe L1 and L2. Let's see. Ethernet, definitely. VGA maybe? report.
Does that say parallel?
Yeah, parallel. Maybe, so definitely know these words. And also, you guys can look over the notes from lecture and then see if you if any other key terms come up. If it's in the lecture, then it's fair game for the exam. Just to quickly go over these. Yes?
I have a question. Do you know if the questions are going to be in multiple choice or essay style?
Okay, so the exam will be a combination of, it can be anything. It can be multiple choice. It can be true, false questions. It can be short answers. It can be matching. There are samples of PACS exams on the website that you can go on and look at. It's usually multiple choice for the first few questions, and then there'll be some short questions where maybe one or two sentences are enough. And then on the exam on 2006, there's one question where you're given an image of a diagram of a hardware, and you have to identify, say, where is the motherboard, where is the Ethernet, where does the Ethernet go, where does the parallel port go for printer, etc. Just be familiar with how each hole looks like. So, if you see something, inefficient. Okay, while it's running, let's.
How about the diagram of the CPU?
Oh, okay. Did they go over that in class?
Yeah.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2. Oh, we'll wait for one more second. Okay. So this was on 2006 exam. I believe it won't be this complicated. So this question was, you're given this diagram, and you have to identify where the CDRW drive is, where the CPU is, where the digital camera goes, where's the hard drive, etc. And there's answer keys online, so I won't go over about everything. But in general, you would have to at least say know what USB does. So you can't say, if you say like you stick an Ethernet cable into USB, that would be wrong. Like the parallel port that is for printers, and like the size or the shape of it, you should at least have an image of that in your mind.
What is, yes, up above with writing side parallel port, the SPDIF? Do you have any idea what that is? Isn't the dotted squares?
Yeah. Don't worry about that too much. Just okay. The parallel. The important part is the parallel port,
right.
And that's where the printer goes. Okay. And just to, I guess we have time. Quickly go over these terms before I go into the processings. So the motherboard is like the central auditory system for the computer. The CPU, you can think of it as the brain. And that's where all the computation takes place. And CPU is measured in hertz, so they can be in gigahertz or megahertz. HDD, so that's where that's the hard drive. Let me put this here too. CPU. L1. L2. RAM, yeah. and then HDD, or hard drive. So the hard drive is on this end. And you can think of these. This is like, the memory here are small and fast and expensive. Whereas the memory here for the hard drive is big. It's slower. And it's also cheaper. OK, so that covers.
What's the difference between memory and storage?
Memory.
No, it's talking about RAM is volatile.
Oh,
or persistent.
Right, right. Yeah, so so think of one analogy that Dan used in the past is that you can think of RAM as like, so RAM stands for random access memory. And these are short-term memory. You can think of this as your desk. And then think of this as like your shelf for everything that you have. So your shelf is where everything goes. And if you need to do work, you would go to the shelf and get the information that you need and then put it onto your desk, and that's where your workspace is. Same thing for L2 and L1. These are the same thing. So L2 is even faster than RAM. It gets things even faster, but it stores less things in there. And these will be like your workspace. Once you're done with your work, you would throw them back into the hard drive, and then you can get more information from there. Okay.
So what's a couple of things you could say about this in terms of this diagram?
Like, what do you mean?
In terms of, I'm asking the class, like, mm-hmm. the closer you are to the CPU, what can you say about the faster mm-hmm. things are?
Yeah.
And the farther away, the slower things uh-huh. are. I mean, it's simple.
And the closer you get, the more expensive it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's faster. And
but it's also only temporary. You're not storing anything yet. Everything that's being stored is going back to the hard drive for storage.
Say that again?
It's only temporary storage, the L1, L2, and RAM.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Everything has to go back to the
hard drive
for mm-hmm. storage.
Exactly. So that's why these are called short-term memories, and this is for long-term, because that's where things will be stored. And once you power off your computer, only the things that you're stored in hard drive will be there, and the other things will be gone.
Now, will they use volatile and non-volatile?
Will they use the terms volatile and non-volatile?
Yes, for memory.
Yeah.
Meaning
it's off, yeah.
It's gone. But
and then hard drive is non-volatile. Okay. Next thing is. Are there any questions on hard drives or hardwares? Okay. Next thing is, these are just numbers that you have to memorize. So now I'm going to internet and TCP/IP stuff. So the HTTP, SMTP, TP, and HTTPS. Number. So this is, we went over this in class today, just to refresh your memory. HTTP has the port number of 80. SMTP has 25. And HTTPS is 443. Yeah. And if these acronyms don't make sense to you, basically HTTP is, you know, just internet, the www things. SMTP is where you would do your mails. And HTTPS is a secured HTTP. That's what the S is for. URLs. So URLs look like, let's see.
What does URL stand for?
Uniform Resource Locator.
Yes.
And a couple other things. Not very helpful.
You can think of URL stands for web address, if that's easier. And URL has the format of protocol.
And don't call it an URL.
let's see. Host path. Resource. What's more important are these two. So the protocol can be, for example, HTTP is an example of protocol. If I do, let's do an example. So let's say weather.yahoo.com. There you have a website. Or a web address. This HTTP is a protocol, and this is a host. Okay, and the host is divided into three parts, or it can be two or three parts. Do you guys remember what they are? So let's start from this, the .com.
That what is TLD?
Exactly. So these TLD, they can be .com, .net, .gov, .edu, .tv, anything that or .uk, .co.uk, these are TLDs. What about Yahoo?
Domain.
Mm-hmm. Domain. And if you have something before that.
Subdomain.
Exactly. Why do you need a domain and then a subdomain? Why not just a domain?
Subdomain can break the domain down more.
Yeah.
Meaning you could have sports.yahoo.com.
Exactly. Yeah, and it also makes things easier for us to realize that, you know, weather.yahoo.com is a website from yahoo.com that is about weather, and news.yahoo.com is a website for Yahoo. That talks about the news. And for emails. Email. Let's say we have hang88@fast.harvard.edu. So again, this .edu will be a TLD. The Harvard part will be the domain. The fast part is a subdomain. And whatever precedes this symbol will be the username.
Do you see that again?
Yes. So just to write out, this is the username. Chris, can you see me? At sub D for domain. That's what you have here, and then compare that to this. This is for URLs.
Okay, so what about the paths and the resource?
So those are, they can be, so you like for some websites, let's say Yahoo doesn't have these subdomains. Though, if you want to look at weather on yahoo.com, the URL might look like yahoo.com and you see a slash, and then weather, and then maybe like a slash that says history for past weather. And these are what the path and resources are. Okay, so one question that came up in the past on the exam was true or false. Only nonprofit organizations can own domains ending in .org. It's false. Do you guys know what ISP is? Internet Service Provider? Only ISPs can own domains ending in .net. It's also false. Only corporations can own domains ending in .com. That's also false. Only the government can own domains ending in .gov.
Yes, that's true.
That's true.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, very responsive. Okay, that is all for this. Okay, I guess this is the last thing that I have.
Alex?
Yes?
I have plenty of tape if you want to go over. It's up to you.
Okay. Sure. So...
It'll be on tape if you guys guess.
TCP/IP. And that's what we went over today in class. Okay, IP stands for Internet Protocol. What does TCP stand for? Say that again.
Transmission Control Protocol.
And again, these names are less important than knowing what it actually does. And what TCP/IP does is the IP is where you get the IP address from, and TCP is where you get the data from. So you can imagine, like the example that we did in class today, say you have a letter, and you have an envelope. And this letter contains some data that you want to pass from A to B. This letter will be the TCP. And this envelope, where it has the from and then the to information, these are the IP addresses. This is IP. Okay? And when you're sending information from, you know, one computer to another, you would be storing these data into this envelope, and then you break this envelope in multiple parts, and then you send out into the world, and then it'll somehow reach your destination like this. That's the general idea of TCP/IP.
And if one of them doesn't get there,
okay,
that's also fine.
Right. So what if, let's say, these packets, we number them 1, 2, 3, 4, and when it reaches the end, I received 1, 2, and 4, and I didn't get 3. What happened?
It would resend.
Mm-hmm. So,
Would it resend just the third packet, or would it resend the whole?
I believe just the third one. So these TCP...
No, it would send the whole thing, wouldn't it? Because didn't they say that if it was the other way, it was the streamline?
If it's a video, then it just doesn't resend it. It just skips it. It goes to the next thing. But
that's,
if it's like...
That's
it would want that quarter of the document or whatever.
Right, so they would only just send that piece.
They would send the third part because you have 1, 2, and 4, so they can take a shorter...
Okay. Yes, so the answer is it will just send. So within these data that I'm passing from A to B, there are these headers that contains information about, and just like the heading of a page, you know, just basic information. And I've lost my train of thought.
So it'll say who it's sent from and it's where it's going?
Right. So on this end, I would get this letter with this missing piece, and from these headers, I would realize that, oh, I'm missing one piece here, and I would, you know, send something back from based on the from IP address, a signal that says I'm missing part 3, and then this signal would go back to computer A, and then I would retrieve that data again over to computer B.
So what's TCP good for, and what is UDP good for, and why?
You guys remember what universal something?
Do you want your email sent by UDP?
No, because it won't send just that piece.
Mm-hmm. Because the benefit of TCP is that it has that feedback mechanism and it tells you when something's missing. So it has that insurance.
Right. Insurance. So when you are, say, watching live TV on the internet or live broadcasting or something on the internet, live radio station, for example, you want to use UDP, because what UDP does is it just... the time just moves on, and if you missed retrieving any data, you missed it. And that's good because, say, let's say the time goes on. If you're missing this piece, you don't want the computer to spend more time to go back and retrieve this piece while you're already somewhere down the line already. Whereas in if you're sending an email, for example, or something that you must know things in its completion, you want the transmission to go through TCP/IP because you want the feedback, you want to get every piece of information that you want. Okay? Let's see. All right. So
UDP uses that, the buffering,
yes,
to let you know that it's just getting...
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these are...
I think they said
TCP in class. Do both of them use buffering? I don't know. Oh, sorry. Yes, TCP/IP does use buffering. Okay, so these are all the things I have. Oh, by the way, if you go on the course website...
Mm-hmm. Was that instead of resending the whole packet for the email,
mm-hmm,
they'll only do the streaming video and the buffering? Or did I just do the whole thing backwards?
I'm not quite sure what.
It sounds like you're talking about two separate things. Like you're talking about email and you're talking about video.
Yeah.
So I think it differs depending on which one it is.
Right, and one falls
on
one, and one falls
on
the other
completely.
Email has to be
obviously
TCP. Mm-hmm.
So email...
It can't be missing part of it, whereas video, right, you skip over the packet. But,
yeah.
Well, it depends on what kind of video you want. If you want a live streaming video, then you want UDP. But if you're, say, you're downloading a movie clip that you want to save into your computer, then you want to use TCP/IP because you don't care about getting information at the exact time frame. You just want to get the entire video clip in its entirety. If you want to get everything, you use TCP/IP.
Okay.
If you want to keep up with the time, yeah, you use UDP.
Like you're watching a sports program, you don't want to like wait for it to go back and give you those bits about, you know, the previous
What was I doing with this? Oh. So if you go to computer science. If you go to the website. here you'll see jargon, hardware intern.
Is it possible to scroll up a little bit? Because it's
yes. I'm with the screen down. So if you go to computerscience1.net, here you will see a list of terms. If you click on them, obviously you don't need to know everything, and there are definitions too. But for example, ASCII is something that you should know, base 10, base 2, think maybe. Binary, you should know what bus is. It's not a vehicle, but it's different in computer science. Know what bit versus byte is. Cookie, we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, we did.
We did?
Yeah.
Okay, we did.
Not in great depth.
In the first lecture, you took apart a floppy.
Okay, oh, right. So something that I missed talking about the floppy disk is... okay, so do you guys know how much a floppy disk can store?
1.44.
And then the unit?
Megabytes.
And these data are stored in zeros and ones, and they're stored magnetically. So you can think of it as, so these information are stored digitally. You can think of it as that. And each piece of information is either zero or one. And let's say the down, which is off, is 0, and the up is 1. So these will be 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, et cetera. That's the idea of it within a floppy disk. And that's why if you take a magnet and just rub it against the floppy disk, you'll mess up the information because you might accidentally flip, say, this one into a 1. This might turn to a 0. And then your data will be messed up like that.
Lots of useless information. They're called pits and lands.
Mm-hmm. This is a list of all the possible vocabulary terms. Definitely know the ones that you have heard of. Those you will have to know for the test. Also, if you look here, there's another review video made 4 years, 3.5 years ago. The content is almost the same. You can watch that along with this one. If you see anything that you're not familiar with, that you didn't hear about over the past 4 lectures, it's likely that that material won't be covered. It was covered before, but not covered this year. So don't worry about everything. And here is another exam, the full 2006 exam 1. And some of the questions that I pulled up today and in the last section, I got them from this exam. So you can just look over these and the answer key for your own practice. And also, if you have any questions, again, help@computerscience1.net is a place where you can ask for help. Try not to email Dan or David alone without emailing us, because otherwise you'll get, if you email help@computerscience1.net, you would have all these TFs to help to reply to your email, whereas if you email Dan or David, only Dan or David will see your email, and thus the turnaround time will be slower. If you guys want, I can hold an office hour Sunday night as like a last minute emergency question thing. If you guys are interested, email me. My email address is... And that says A Chang, C-H-A-N-G, 88 at fast.harvard.edu. Email me and let me know that you would want to meet up individually, or actually not individually, as a group, but on Sunday night, and then we can work out a time for you guys. And that works for not only the people in this section, but anyone else who can be here on Sunday night also.
Do you have a ballpark for a time?
A what? Let me see my schedule. Okay, I can do any time after 7. So 7 p.m. until 1, 2 a.m. I actually, let's see.
That's the youth speaking.
Yeah.
Pick a time.
And I don't know if you guys are free during the day, but I can do maybe like between 11 and 1 on Monday also. So if you would like to come to office hours, email me all the times that you can, and I will plan maybe 1 or 2 hours that will accommodate most of the people. Yeah.
If we just have like a quick question, will you be online to answer your question?
Yeah. Okay. You just email me, or email help.
Okay.
And we'll help.
Okay.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No. Okay, then that's it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.